Democracy Now!, I'm Aaron Maté.
With special thanks to Democracy Now!'s Nicole Salazar and Hani Massoud, as well as Julius Fisher of Vancouver's Working TV and the Vancouver Media Co-op. In these last few minutes, we're joined by Democracy Now! Producer Aaron Maté. What was it like, Aaron, to go home? Going to Vancouver was actually going home for you.
It was. It's interesting, Amy. You leave and you come back, and on the one hand, there's this huge hoopla and people in downtown celebrating. There were zip lines fastened to buildings, and people were literally flying over your head, screaming and hollering, and there's a lot of sort of celebration. But one thing actually we didn't get to in this piece was sort of this neo-authoritarian push that came along with these Olympics. There was a censorship put on artists, people who had to, if they took Olympic funding, had to sign contracts vowing not to criticize the Olympic Committee or the Games. In one case, one gallery actually had to paint over a mural it had put up of the Olympic symbol with five unhappy faces and one happy face just to depict the artist's feelings about the Games. You know, one happy face, but mostly unhappy faces. It had to be taken down. That was challenged, and then eventually it was put back up. But to come back to this weird struggle in a, you know, in a North American city where murals have to be debated based on their feelings, about, based on their statements about these Olympic Games, was it was surreal.
It's amazing to think, since we certainly didn't get it in all the glitz, that that Vancouver's downtown east side is the poorest postal code in all of Canada.
It is, yeah. And what's striking is that it's literally just blocks from the main Olympic sites. Some of the things that we saw, that department store where people are lined up down the block just to buy merchandise, it's about a few blocks away from where the Tent Village was and where residents occupied this vacant condo lot for 2 weeks. It's the poverty there is striking, and it's visible everywhere.
And the Tent City did have a victory.
It did. It was amazing. This actually was just announced yesterday. This condo lot was a contentious place, and people were quite nervous about it when it was first purchased. It's seen as a site of gentrification. And so it was taken over, and people brought in tents, over 40 tents. There were campfires, people watching around the clock. They demanded housing, and they got it. The city awarded housing to 41 people. Every single homeless person that was living in Tent City that they could account for has now been given a place in social housing.
Well, I want to thank you very much for an excellent report, Aaron, and it's nice to have you back. Aaron Maté, Democracy Now! Producer, and that does it for our broadcast. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Berkshire, Hoda Kadous, Aaron Maté, Anjali Kamat, Steve Martinez, Nicole Salazar, Hani Massoud, Ravi Karan, Mike DeFilippo, Peter Curry, Miguel Nogueras, our engineers. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Hello, it's DJ Cliff Stoll with 90.1 FM WSB, and I'm here to present to you tonight's concert billboard. Tonight at Hammerstein Ballroom, we have Flogging Molly. And at Spike Hill Bar at 10 p.m., we have Aqua Cherry. In the Bowery Ballroom at 7:30 p.m. sharp, we have Cage the Elephant, As Tall as Lions. At the Knitting Factory in Brooklyn at 7 p.m. in the main space, we have Amy B. Presents, Sky White Tigers, Beast of Eden, Wu Li Holistic. On Wednesday night, we have at the Stoller Center for Arts at 8 p.m., we have Music on a Winter's Eve. Also at 7:30 in the Sullivan Hall, we have Rock and Grow Concert featuring Davey and the Train and a Train Wreck, Two Thirds Goat, and Pie Boys Flat. Also at the Knitting Factory in Brooklyn at 7 p.m. in the main space, we have starring What's Wrong With Us, PC Worship, Up Dead Sound, Died Sound, I should say. On Thursday, at Webster Hall, we have Mayor Hawthorne and County. At the Music Hall of Williamsburg, we have Cage the Elephant. At Sullivan Hall, we have Saladu, Under the Rasta Influence, Dexter Scott, Tim Heron Corporation, Sturk 9, Rabbits Against Magic, and that's at 7:30 p.m. On Friday, at the theater at Westbury, we have Leon Russell, The Radiators, and Uncle Lucius. At Lulu's Village Pub, we have Missing Antidote with special guest Knucklehead. At the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Central Nassau, we have the Beatles sing-along, Jamboree with Glenn Rothel, Beatlemania, Paul, and John Redgay. And that's it for today.
Okay, great. That's it for today. It's WUSB Stony Brook. It's time for Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening. I am out of it today. Oh, boy. You know, I can't even begin to describe the things that I've already either broken or completely fouled up. I forgot my phones. Yeah, I always walk around with phones, and I totally forgot to bring my phones. And, you know, there's this sort of panic that goes through you when you realize, hey, I'm not able to communicate. I can't talk to people. And, you know, it wasn't that long ago where people didn't walk around with these communication devices all the time. I remember it was a big deal when I had a beeper or pager, whatever you called the thing. You know, and sometimes if you listen to the older shows, you'll hear it go off while I'm talking. And I say, oh, well, I have to call somebody back. And that was how we stayed in touch in the modern era back then. And then prior to that, well, we simply made phone calls from landlines. Or arrange to meet people. That's the thing, you know, with today's society, where everybody has a cell phone, there can never be another instance where you can ask somebody, hey, where were you? I waited for you. Because you have their phone number. You can always call them and ask them, where are you? I am waiting for you. You know, so you never have that conversation anymore. Unless you're meeting up with people whose numbers you don't have. Which, I guess, will always happen. But it just seems like we're moving into this stage of our development as a race where we're constantly communicating with each other, and there's no longer any possibility for anyone to be out of the loop. And yet, everybody I talk to feels like they're out of the loop. So I don't know how we're not making progress here. We can call people all the time, and yet we're having trouble talking to each other. It's really something. I can't tell you the number of times this is true. And tell me if this has happened to you, where you're speaking to somebody, you're actually speaking with a person, and you find out that they went and they saw that big Broadway play that you wanted to see, and they didn't ask you to come. And you said, hey, what gives? Why didn't you ask me to come? Oh, didn't you see I tweeted about it. I sent you a Facebook invite. Of course, I sent it to everybody in the Western Hemisphere as well, but you should have been part of my RSS feed. You should have seen it. You know, this passive communication that you're supposed to be a part of now, where basically you're tuned to thousands of little radio stations, all of which are human beings, and you're supposed to catch their particular bulletins and know when the events are, and that saves them the trouble of actually communicating with you and speaking to you and asking you, hey, would you like to join me on this? I can't tell you how many times I've both witnessed that happen and had it happen to myself. And in a way, you know, I feel like I'm kind of not in the loop again when I complain about this and say, you know, it's not the same thing. It's not the same thing as giving somebody a call or speaking to them in person. You know, you were in the same room as me the other day and you didn't mention it then. Things like this, I just find happening over and over again. Yeah, I thought you were reading my tweets. You know what? The next person who says that to me, I am unfollowing you. And I can't believe I've just used that word on the radio, but I will. I will unfriend you, too, on Facebook if I have to. But we'll start with the unfollowing and see if you learn your lesson from that. Oh, my God. What's happening to us? What's happening to our society where this is what we're reduced to as far as communicating? You know, I remember back, and maybe I'll forget my phones all the time now because I think it's better this way. People constantly texting me messages. You know what? I'm driving in my car, all right? I can speak to people on my phone. It's not hard to do. I don't care if it's illegal. I'll do it anyway because I know what's safe and what's not safe when I'm behind the wheel. And I can always drop my phone on the ground if I need to, and I have done it before. And sometimes people get angry at me. You know what? You didn't say goodbye to me. Yeah, I didn't say goodbye to you because there was a guy who just cut me off. And either I had to swerve for my life or I had a particularly cutting remark to throw his way. And I had to drop the phone immediately. Didn't have time to say goodbye. Sorry, deal with it. But that's one of the things you can do with a handheld device that you cannot do with a hands-free device. With a hands-free device, you have to press a button to disconnect. Otherwise, the person's still yammering in your ear when you might need that particular sense. So, yeah, I can do that. I can communicate. And I know people will debate me on this, but, you know, it's everybody has their own level of abilities. I heard a story the other day where this school bus driver had in the past been involved in a fatal accident because he was talking on his cell phone or texting. I'm not sure which, doing something with his cell phone and not paying attention while he was driving. He wound up killing somebody. And this guy got a job as a school bus driver. I don't think he was a school bus driver when he did that. I think he got the job as a school bus driver afterwards. And then the big news story was this guy got involved in another accident. Didn't involve a cell phone in any way, but he got involved in another accident. It might have been another fatal accident, in fact. It was a serious accident. And that's when they started looking into this and saying, hey, how come we didn't catch this? That this guy had been involved before in an accident, a fatal accident involving a cell phone, and here he is involved in another fatal accident. But what that story proves to me is that the guy was a lousy driver and will just get into crashes no matter what the circumstances are at some point. And we all know people like this. We all know people that are constantly wrecking their cars, hitting trees, hitting other cars, flipping over for no particular reason. There are bad drivers in the world, and yes, those people should definitely not be on cell phones or really distracted in any way. And if I had my way, they wouldn't be behind the wheel in the first place. And maybe if we had better mass transit in this country, they wouldn't have to be. But I think it's very simplistic to say, oh, because these people can't run their own lives behind the wheel and they can't drive safely, we have to treat everybody the same way. And I think the only reason we do that is so we don't hurt their feelings. We don't say, you know what, you suck, and we don't want you doing this, and you can't handle two things at once, so it's not legal for you to do two things at once. This person can do it. This person is fine. You can't because you suck. You know, I think there's just this this will to not do that, to be nicer to these people. But the fact of the matter is, yes, you can. If you have common sense, you can do two things at once. I can do three things at once sometimes. Today, I'm not doing two things at once. I forgot my phones. I don't think I should be driving and texting or talking. But anyway, to get back to my original point, if I'm talking to somebody on the phone in my car, that's one thing. Texting is harder. Texting requires more concentration. I can do it without looking at my phone. I can text the intelligent spelling thing. What do they call that? This is the kind of thing. I'm losing particular parts of my brain because of the way I'm feeling right now. But there's a word for that. It's T9. I know it's T9 something, but that's not the word I'm looking for. Where basically you simply hold a keypad and you hit, if you want to type letter C. Actually, no, you don't do it that way. That's the other way of doing it. Predictive text. That's it. Predictive texting. Where it knows what you're trying to say. So if you type the letters 228, for instance, it'll say, oh, you want to say cat? And you say, no, you idiot, I want to say bat. So if that's the case, you hit the star key or something, and it goes to the next possible word and tells you that. The other way of doing it, the less predictable way, is if you want to spell cat, you'd have to hit 2-3 times and then pause a moment and then hit 2 once for the A, and that's why you have to pause, because it's the same key. Otherwise, it might think you're trying to do something 4 times, and then you hit the 8 once because T is the first letter on the keypad. Yeah, okay, you can do all that. You can do all of that either with the predictive texting or with counting it out without actually having to look at the phone. You can do that. A lot of people don't do that. A lot of people have to stare at it intently, you know, and it's... maybe those people shouldn't be texting while driving. And I know I don't like texting while driving because you still have to read the texts and you have to take your eyes off the road momentarily to read those texts. What annoys me is when you tell people this, that, you know what, I'm driving, so talk to me, call me, speak to me. And they still continue texting because we're in the society where we don't talk to each other. We simply communicate via RSS feeds and Twitter and Facebook and text messaging and the occasional IM. It's silly. It really is. And it really is driven home on those rare occasions when you have what's known as a landline-to-landline conversation. That's when you're on one of those phones that actually has a wire that runs into the wall. Has everybody seen those? I'm not sure. I tried to describe it to somebody in college the other day, and they didn't seem to know what I was talking about. They really didn't. But imagine, okay, you do that, and then the person that you're talking to on the other end of the phone is also doing that. The difference in quality, assuming you have a decent phone, and it's a lot easier to get decent phones that are landlines, assuming you have that, the quality is just simply worlds of difference between any cell phone that you might be using today. I don't care how smart the thing is. It might be a very smart phone, but it's still got a very crappy connection because of the technology. And I think one of the reasons for that is because they're trying to cram as much as possible into the limited bandwidth they have. And if one or two phone companies would simply say, you know what, we're going to have less customers, maybe we'll make them pay a little bit more, but we're going to have three times as much bandwidth for the actual voice path. And guess what? You'll be able to talk at the same time so you can interrupt each other. How many times does this happen where you're talking to somebody and you're trying to interrupt them, but they just keep going and they can't hear you interrupting them because they've got the one-way path in the conversation. And you have to wait for them to take a breath or pause in some particular way. And that leads to all kinds of bad feelings too. How did I get off on it? Because I forgot my phones. This just happened now. And I've been a little bit anxious because I can't communicate with people. Here I am talking on the radio, and I'm worried about not being able to communicate with people. You know, there's something wrong with that. If you were expecting a text from me, if you're expecting a phone call from me, if you're expecting me to pick up my phone after my show, not during my show certainly, well, you're going to be disappointed because I don't have these devices with me. So we'll just have to figure something else out. That's it. You know, we can deal with it. It's not that hard. But why did I forget my phone? Well, you know, I think it's because, like I said, I'm kind of out of it today. I've been involved in massive deadlines, both for the magazine and for the new 2600 book, which I can't say any more than I already have about. Sorry. But both deadlines came on the same day. And do they make up these schedules just to torture me? It basically means 18-hour days of just nothing but reading and writing and proofing and redoing and things like that. It's fun if you like it. I do like it, but sometimes it gets to be a bit much. And it was yesterday morning, I think about 6 a.m., I just, all of a sudden, I couldn't see the words in front of me. I could not see them. They were just sort of missing letters, and I was realizing, I just can't concentrate anymore. I'm doing too much of this. Too much pressure, too much stress. I just had to sort of back off a little bit. And that's important. That's important not to overdo it, but it also kind of led me into having what is now my second day of kind of a headache that, I just don't want people to annoy me, that's all, because I already have the headache, so I don't need people to give me any further stress because I'm not responsible for the things I say and the things that I do. All right, just fair warning to everybody. Now, with that in mind, this is our first program in a while where we're not having a game at 45, so we can actually take phone calls if there are any listeners left out there. Yeah, I'd like to talk about all kinds of things, maybe what we just discussed, what I just discussed, maybe some other things, because there are other things going on in the world. In fact, there's something that I really wanted to read. I've been wanting to read this for a little while. Actually for the last week since I first read it. Maybe we can get some comments on that as well. But for further reference, maybe at about 20 of, a quarter of, the phone number, 631-632-9872. That's 631-632-WUSB. You can call us and actually converse, something we haven't had a chance to do in a while. And I would take this opportunity seriously because we're going to have the WUSB spring fundraiser coming up pretty soon. And you know, when we do that, that's a month of begging for money. We can't really take phone calls for on air. We can take phone calls to keep us on the air so we can take phone calls later. But I believe that's starting up pretty soon. Maybe even next week. I don't know. I have to look at the schedule. So, yeah, at about 20 of or a quarter of, hopefully the phone lines will light up and we can reacquaint each other with what's going on in our respective lives. I'm sorry. That's what all the waving's about. Okay, you guys got to catch a train. Let's do this now. I'm sorry. We'll be right back. Okay, I'm sorry. I was fixing something. Very nice. The dancers there came in. I'm going to try to make this as quick as possible. By the way, I understand that the week I wasn't here, you guys showed up and didn't know that we weren't doing the quest for Starbucks, and I apologize for that. I know you guys have another gig in Queens, and you got to make the train. So let's make this as done as quickly as possible. For those who don't know, we're doing a massive elimination tournament to figure out which will be the first Starbucks I ever go to in my life, because I've never been to one before. We haven't done this in a couple of weeks because of the games, but now we're up to the fourth round. Tonight we are bringing it down from, 2048 down to 1,024 potential Starbucks that I could make my first. And whatever one winds up being the one is the one I have to go to. And we listed a bunch of possible places, just a random 10 that we picked out of the list a couple of weeks ago, and a couple of rounds ago, actually. And we're just seeing if any of those make it to the final round. It's very, very unlikely that'll happen. But I'm sorry. Okay, I'm babbling. Let's can we do the drawing now? Because these guys have to go. All right. All right. Sorry, I didn't have your mic up. Okay, but all right then. That's the drawing has been completed. Right. All right. And then second, we're going to figure out those particular, okay, I'll tell you what the cities were that we originally, well, the ones that made it for the to the fourth round were Harrisonburg, Virginia, Aventura, Florida, Irvine, California, Clermont, Florida, Guadalajara, Mexico, Makati City, Philippines, Santiago, Chile, Gainesville, Florida, Red Bank, New Jersey, and Sacramento, California. Now, again, these are just random. You know, there's now 1,024 names, and there's all kinds of other possibilities. And just because the city is eliminated once doesn't mean that all their locations have been eliminated. Okay, we have some results here. Clermont, Florida has advanced to the fourth round, and so has Guadalajara, Mexico. That's great. But that's it? Only two made it. Oh, wow. Okay, well, that was a bloodbath, wasn't it? Wow, okay, well, that shows you how unforgiving the drawing is. Okay. All right, you guys get out of here. Next week we'll be cutting it down one more round. We'll be in the fifth round, then we'll bring it down to 512, almost getting to the point where we can start listing out the ones that are the finalists. 512 is probably a little bit too much, but after that, it's 256, and then 128, and then 64. So, you know, it's getting less and less. All right, grand flourish here. Okay. All right. You run along now, and yeah, hopefully they make it. I still don't understand why we need dancers for this. It's a radio show, but whatever. I don't make decisions. Okay, and then we have the other feature that we're also embarked in. You know, this we're feature heavy this year. We really are. It's a result of the meetings we had about the show, the future of the show last year, the end of last year, and now we have all these new features that we're introducing, which is great. You know, I'm not complaining. I think it's a wonderful idea. And this particular one has to do with the 100th anniversary of the Bell System, this vinyl album that I have called Good Friends Are for Keeps, America Sings of Telephones. This was released in 1976, and we've been featuring one song per week off of this album. We've already heard Hello, My Baby. We've heard All Alone by Dinah Shore. We've heard Pennsylvania 65,000 by the Glenn Miller Band. What we're going to hear now is a song called It Must Be Him. I have no idea what this is all about, but I can tell you from the liner notes, our songwriters can thank their lucky stars that we Americans usually mumble hello to answer the phone a heightener of romantic tension. It sure beats Vicky Carr here, as Ms. Vicky Carr frantically answers the phone hoping to hear her one and only's voice to It Must Be Him, which is a heartfelt bestseller from 1967. All right, let's listen to that, and then we'll continue with the rest of the show.
I tell myself what's done is done. I tell myself don't be a fool. Play the field, have a lot of fun. It's easy when you play it cool. I tell myself, don't be a chump. Who cares? Let him stay away. That's when the phone rings and I jump. And as I grab the phone, I pray. After a while, I myself again. I pick the pieces off the floor, put my heart on the shelf again. He'll never hurt me anymore. I'm not a puppet on a string. I'll find somebody else someday. That's when the phone rings. And once again, I start to pray. Let it please be him. Oh dear God, it must be him. It must be him. Or I shall die. Or I shall die. Oh hello, hello, my dear God. It must be him. But it's not him. And then I die. Again I die. Let it please be him. Oh dear God. It must be him. It must be him. Or I shall die.
Wow. Okay. You know what, lady? You got some problems there. Really, you gotta let it go. Wow. I wouldn't want to call somebody who is that desperate to hear my voice. And I sure hope I'm never that desperate to hear anybody else's voice. But you know what? I never heard her say what they said on these liner notes. I didn't hear her say Vicky Carr here. What are they talking about? Maybe it's a different song. Okay, well, here's a little bit of history for you. And by the way, we're almost getting to the end of side one of this album. That's the fourth out of five tracks on side one. Good Friends Are For Keeps. We were talking last time we did this about some milestones. The first transatlantic radio telephone transmission was accomplished in 1915 from a transmitting station in Arlington, Virginia, to the Eiffel Tower in Paris. In 1919, the Bell System announced the... for the first time, plans for introducing dial telephones and machine switching in its exchanges. The first commercial radio station was established by the Bell System in New York in 1922. Station WEAF. They're not around anymore. This station saw many radio firsts, the first radio address by a U.S. president, Warren G. Harding, the first broadcast of a World Series game, the first football game broadcast over a wire hookup, and the first broadcast of the presidential election returns when Calvin Coolidge defeated John W. Davis. The transmission of pictures over telephone wires was first publicly demonstrated by Bell System engineers in 1924 from Cleveland to New York. During 1925, a new method of completing long-distance calls was introduced that cut the time for completion of calls from about 7 minutes, 7 minutes to make a phone call at the beginning of that year, 1925, to 2 minutes or less. That's how long it used to take to make a phone. You know, I just wish we could have one retro day of old-fashioned telephony where we just go back to the way it used to be. Everybody talks on a landline. Okay, you wait 7 minutes for the phone call to connect. You probably have to bellow the top of your lungs to be heard, and you got to speak to an operator who agrees to do all this for you. Just, you know, for the sake of it, for the fun of it. Anyway, calls were put through by the operator, who received them from the customer rather than being passed along by notes on a conveyor or by messenger to a second operator at another position. Yes, that's how they used to do things. Sound from motion pictures was developed by Bell Labs in 1926, first for Don Juan with John Barrymore, then in 1927 for Al Jolson in The Jazz Singer. In 1927, the first public demonstration of television in America by wire was made, from Washington, D.C. to Bell Labs in New York. You know, anybody who says nothing happened in the 1920s does not know what they're talking about. Look at all these technological advances. Yeah, really changed our world. Commercial radio telephone service was opened between New York and London in 1927. The charge was, ready? $75 for a 3-minute call. Yeah, and $75 for a 3-minute call. I mean, that's like, what, a month's wages or something? Probably more than that. I don't know. Anybody who grew up in the 1920s, give us a call. Let us know. In 1935, the first round-the-world telephone call was completed from AT&T President Walter Gifford in one room in the Long Lines building in New York to the chief executive of Long Lines in another. A coaxial cable system was installed between New York and Philadelphia in 1936, the forerunner of a nationwide coaxial cable system, and the first commercial multi-channel high-frequency microwave radio relay system. I just want to say that again. Indulge me. The first commercial multi-channel high-frequency microwave radio relay system in the Bell system was placed in service in Southern California in 1946. A Boston to New York system was opened in the following year. We have more history, but we'll save that for a future week. But yeah, that's our little visit with the Bell system. Good friends are for keeps. The 100th anniversary record that came out on vinyl in 1976. Okay. I want to read this story because this story really made me very depressed when it came out, because it just made me feel like we're not getting anywhere. We're just moving backwards. And I don't know if I'm going to read the whole thing. I'll read some of it, and then we'll hopefully take some phone calls, too. When President Obama took office, gun rights advocates sounded the alarm, warning that he intended to strip them of their arms and ammunition. And yet the opposite is happening. Mr. Obama has been largely silent on the issue, while states are engaged in a new and largely successful push for expanded gun rights, even passing measures that had been rejected in the past. In Virginia, the General Assembly approved a bill last week, it was actually about 2 weeks ago, that allows people to carry concealed weapons in bars and restaurants that serve alcohol. It's incredible how these things are so important to people. I must be able to carry my concealed weapon inside a bar. Why? Why is that so important? But yet it is. House of Delegates voted to repeal a 17-year-old ban on buying more than one handgun a month. Because that's just not enough to keep a family stock these days, is it? You gotta buy more than one handgun a month. And these actions came less than 3 years after the shootings at Virginia Tech that claimed 33 lives and prompted a major national push for increased gun control. Arizona and Wyoming lawmakers are considering nearly a half dozen pro-gun measures, including one that would allow residents to carry concealed weapons without a permit. You don't need a permit anymore to carry a weapon. Anybody, children, just line up. We'll hand out the weapons for you. Lawmakers in Montana and Tennessee passed measures last year, the first of their kind, to exempt their states from federal regulation of firearms and ammunition that are made, sold, and used in the state. Similar bills have been proposed in at least three other states. And in the meantime, gun control advocates say Mr. Obama has failed to deliver on campaign promises to close a loophole that allows unlicensed dealers at gun shows to sell firearms without background checks. Also to revive the assault weapons ban and to push states to release data about guns used in crimes. Yes, even that is a struggle to get states to release the data on guns and crime. Unreal. He also signed bills last year allowing guns to be carried in national parks and in luggage on Amtrak trains. We expected a very different picture at this stage, said Paul Helmke, president of the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence, a gun control group that last month issued a report card failing the administration in all seven of the group's major indicators. Gun control advocates have had some successes recently. Proposed bills to allow students to carry guns on college campuses have been blocked in the 20 or so states where they have been proposed. Can you imagine handing out guns to students on campuses? And the meatheads who are for this kind of thing say, well, if you do that, it prevents other students from shooting people. You know, if only, and I've heard this, you heard about the college professor who went berserk and started taking out her fellow professors. This happened a couple of weeks ago. And right away, people are saying, yeah, you know, if only those other professors had guns, this wouldn't have happened. It's an insane argument. Where basically, the solution always is to bring in more guns. That's always the solution. And never an acknowledgement of the problem of a violent society where we just are out of control. We're killing each other left and right. It's gotten to the point where these things happen and they just barely make the news anymore. And it's really sad and pathetic, and it's got nothing to do with the Second Amendment. It's got nothing to do with all that. It's got to do with a lot of us just losing control, losing our grasp of reality. Don't think this is what the Founding Fathers had in mind. Really don't. And the Supreme Court is now debating this whole issue, too. So it's going to be more in the news than ever before. But boy, you know, a little common sense here. Is there any way, maybe if somehow we can just sort of equate healthcare and guns, you know, make them the same, then all these people that are going berserk over fears that Obama's going to come into their homes and take away their precious armaments that they apparently don't have enough of already, if we could somehow equate that to healthcare, will they maybe fight for this as strongly, you know? Because that's what we really should be focusing on. We should be focusing on important issues, like building up mass transit, like having health care for people, not going to any more countries with weaponry to invade them and do various other things. Anyway, gun rights groups remain skeptical of the administration, despite the fact that they haven't done a damn thing against them. The watchword for gun owners is stay ready, said Wayne LaPierre, chief executive of the National Rifle Association. We have had some successes, but we know that the first chance Obama gets, he will pounce on us. Yeah, okay. That Mr. Obama signed legislation allowing guns in national parks and on Amtrak trains should not be seen as respect for the Second Amendment, he said. The two measures had been attached as amendments to larger pieces of legislation. Regardless of Mr. Obama's agenda, gun dealers seem to be reaping the benefits of fears surrounding it. Federal background checks for gun purchases rose to 14 million in 2009, up from 12.7 million in 2008 and 11.2 million in 2007. That is one massive increase there. And it just keeps getting worse, I think. A major setback for state gun control advocates was a recent House vote repealing the one gun per month law in Virginia. Supporters of limiting gun purchases to one a month said the law is important to avoid Virginia's becoming the East Coast top gun running hub. Opponents dismissed the concern. We shouldn't get rid of our Second Amendment rights because some people in New York City want to abuse theirs, said Robert Marshall, a Republican Democrat from Manassas, who supported repeal the one gun a month limit. Gun control advocates hope to win new restrictions after the Virginia Tech massacre on April 16, 2007, which a student shot and killed 32 people before turning a gun on himself. After that shooting, Governor Tim Kaine, a Democrat, pushed for stronger gun control measures. But last year, the legislature rejected a bill requiring background checks for private sales at gun shows and repealed a law that Mr. Kaine had supported to prohibit anyone from carrying concealed weapons into a club or restaurant where alcohol is served. In previous years, the Guns and Bars Bill cleared both chambers but was vetoed by Mr. Kane. But the new governor, Robert McDonnell, has said he supports the measure. As if this has anything to do with protecting one's rights under the Second Amendment. It's got nothing to do with that. It's got to do with people who just want to be able to have their way and carry weaponry everywhere they want to go. And do God knows what. So, so sad. Nobody is even remotely hinting at taking away their precious firearms, but you can see what happens when people back off so much. Do they back off too? No, they just keep pushing. They won't be happy until there's a gun in every room in their house. It's a sickness. It really is. It's an obsession that I've rarely seen with many other things, but I honestly, it's like speaking to a different species. I don't understand it. I don't understand it at all, and it just is very depressing. So, yeah, if you have words to cheer me up here, please give us a call, 631-632-9872. What I'm going to do is go into delay, and forgive me, I haven't done this in a little while, so if I'm a little rusty, we'll get through it. We will. Let's have some help from Joan Jett. We'll be back in just a moment.
Hi, this is Joan Jett from the Blackhearts, and you're rocking with WUSB Stony Brook 90.1. Yeah!
All right, we made it. Good, good. Again, our phone number is 631-632-9872. It's too bad Joan Jett couldn't make it here in person. That would have been better. I'd like to hear what people have to say out there. Hear from some of our listeners. We haven't heard from you in a while. Let's hear one of them now. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Good morning. Good evening, Off the Wall.
Good morning. Well, it might be morning where you are.
No, sorry. Hey, Emmanuel, Eric, how are you?
Okay, caller from somewhere.
Okay, Jeff and Selden, listen. The gun thing is insane, right? Like you said, instead of going, towards progress, now it's regressing.
How many guns do you need?
Listen,
Jeff, how many guns do you need? Tell me,
right,
honestly.
How many
is too many?
I know. No, I think we're trying to figure out what it's about. Is
not
that the fear of whether it's poorer whites or poorer blacks are going to come and invade, a home invasion, and they want to have the guns to, it's not the thing about we want to have a well-armed militia. I believe that's false.
Yeah, because if you even look at the well-armed militia thing, it kind of goes away from their argument because it says that it's got to be some kind of control, there's got to be some kind of governance.
Yeah, no, I think it's all about, the middle class wants to protect themselves from the poor taking their stuff someday, and that's all that's about, right?
Well, probably. I'm sure there's a degree of that. If you just question these people a little bit, maybe you'll get to the bottom of it. What I'd like to know, though, you said home invasion. Well, you know what? What if you're in the bathroom or something? Are you going to carry the gun with you all the time so that you're always ready for the home invasion? Or,
Yeah, of course they would say, yeah. They, can we talk about the 20% who are, now the, I think Obama, the whole John Bircher birthers, Birch Society, I just said that.
John Birch Society, oh yeah.
In other words, these right-wing teabaggers, why aren't they against the corporate rip-off? Oh, they're pro-capitalism, but real fast. Here it is. They're against big government. Uh-huh. All right, so we should have small, corrupt state government where you can have racism and slavery if you want, and the feds will say, the federal government says, no, you can't have slavery, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you must have these regulations. In other words, they would... This is talking about small government. It's all a big lie. These are lies on top of lies,
yeah.
Eric.
No, I agree, and there's a hypocrisy there because, they're for states' rights, and they don't really care if the states abuse them as much as the feds are allegedly abusing them. But maybe if we just broke things up a little bit, there might be more potential to move in a progressive direction as well without being weighed down by all these people who don't want to move anywhere.
You use the word progressive. Guess what? The past 15 years of my life, I've been saying, it was the old thing about from Phil Oakes saying liberals are bad things, so I was progressive, and of course not a liberal, right? Turns out then liberal got demonized, right, for the past 15 years. Turns out I turned Glenn Beck on a year ago, and now, first show, it's the unions and progressivism for the last 100 years that are the enemy. Hello?
Yeah, that's true. Well, that's Glenn Beck for you. Listen, we've got to go to another call. Thanks for your input, and good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Hey, how you doing?
Hi, where are you calling from?
I'm from Stony Brook, actually.
Okay, we have local calls tonight.
Yeah, local calls tonight. Sorry about that.
That's all right. No, that's great. Well, it's good to know we're out there.
Yeah, normally I like to, you know, you guys hear, you know, people from all over the place.
Well, we do have a transmitter, and that's the most expensive part of this operation, so it's good to know it's being used.
Yeah, it sure is. But, you know what, the thing about the guns is I happen to be a gun enthusiast, or whatever you want to call me.
Okay.
You know what, I don't have a safe. I've got friends of mine. When you get a license in Suffolk County, it's just a license, so I'll make this quick.
Mm-hmm.
There's a space on it, and you can get X amount of guns on it, and then, you know, well, the old licenses were like that, and you flip it over. I've got friends of mine that have got two or three stacks of licenses, which probably means they've got, I don't know, 25 or 30 weapons in their house. Okay? No, do I have that many? No, I don't. I like to hunt.
And you say these things aren't kept locked up?
No, what I'm getting at is they've got 30 guns in a safe. That's what I meant.
Okay.
I'm just saying they've got a lot more than I do.
I mean, if you're a bona fide collector and you're into that kind of thing, fine. But, you know, you do have to take safeguards, and I think that's got to be something that's taken very seriously.
Well, yeah, of course it is, especially here in New York. You have no idea. Well, I'm sure that you might. To get a pistol license here in New York, Suffolk County, Suffolk and Nassau, the city, nobody's got enough money for that. It all depends on who you know and how much money you got.
Uh-huh.
Bottom line is, okay, it's pretty rigorous. I mean, it's probably, you go through the same background check as you go through an FBI background check, and they find out if you're a nut or not, or for whatever reason, okay?
As a gun owner, do you have a problem with that?
No, not at all, of course.
Okay.
Of course, you know, of course, because you know what? I'd like to know that when I go to the range, that the guy to the right or left, or the woman to the right or left of me, okay, is reasonably sane for that time that he's shooting next to me.
Right.
Okay. You know, everybody, you know, it's just one of those things. It's an extra safeguard. And for some reason, it's when I'm with people who I know have firearms, who have passed the background check, I tend to hold myself in a bit of a higher regard than most people. Yes, you know, I've never been locked up. I'm not an idiot. I haven't, you know, abuse drugs or any of that sort of stuff. I'm not a felon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I kind of think that, you know, I hold myself to a little bit of a higher regard.
But everybody makes mistakes. Everybody does go down a dark path sometimes, and we can't condemn them for the rest of their lives because of this, but at the same time, we also can't presume that we're incapable of making mistakes ourselves.
Well, that's true, too. I'm sure that those people that had those, you know, those meltdowns, and they go off and do all kinds of silly things.
Mm-hmm.
Like that professor, and where was it again? I'm sorry. Where was Rhode Island?
You know,
I honestly,
I don't remember what state that was in where the professor went ballistic, but, you know, it could be anywhere. It really could be anywhere.
She lost her brother 15 years ago, and that got swept under the counter.
Yeah, and I guarantee you all kinds of things are swept under the rug or wherever with many, many people. There is not one of us, you or I, you know, certainly no exception, who could not completely just lose it one day because the pressure has just gone too much and we just go ballistic for one reason or another. And when that happens, I'd rather not have guns on me to maybe misuse in some way or just be careless with. It's just you have to always treat these things with respect. You can't just treat them as a casual thing because they're not casual.
That's very true. Now, I can't speak for down south and places where their gun laws are a little, I don't want to say lax, but yeah, lax mm-hmm. than they are here in New York.
But, you know, what I just said, where in there is there even a hint of saying, yes, we're going to come and take all your guns away? And that is how it's always being interpreted. That's the kind of fear-mongering that they spread around to get people to go out and buy more and more guns and weaponry and things like that. It's just a very unhealthy society we're creating. It's a society of confrontation where we're just waiting for the next guy to make the wrong move.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. You know, when you go to a gun store or something like that, you talk to my gun buddies, yeah, everybody's got that feeling. I'll be honest with you, I do not.
Okay? Mm-hmm.
I don't know where this is coming from. You know, why everybody thought all of a sudden that, Obama's going to you know, come in and take all the guns. I don't really know where that sort of hysteria started.
Right.
But it's a big snowballing effect because, you know, you go to the store to buy a regular box of 45s or 9s or whatever it is, you can't find them anywhere because everybody's stockpiled.
Yeah, it's some kind of a panic. I just wonder what they're going to be using them all for when they finally collect them all. It's really madness. And, you know, I love having this argument where I ask, okay, so what exactly does the Second Amendment mean to you? And never have I come to the point where basically anything that is being done or hinted at would preclude somebody from engaging in what the Second Amendment allegedly stands for and taking down a corrupt government. You know, you're going to need the army on your side either way. You're going to need tanks and all kinds of other artillery that I don't think we can just go out and buy easily. So it's really it's nonsensical. It's simplistic. And I just wish people be honest and say, you know what, I'm just into collecting these things, and I just want to do that and be left alone and treat them safely and respectfully.
Yeah, that's one way to look at it. You're right about that. You're right. I hear the phone ring. I'll let other people get on.
All right. Thanks for your call. Let's take another one. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Hey, how are you?
Hi, where are you calling from?
Mount Sinai.
Oh, great. I wonder if our internet is working. We don't have any internet calls tonight, but that's great. Mount Sinai is fine.
Yeah, I'm sure everybody's listening, as usual.
I hope so. What's on your mind?
It's a great program. We enjoy it all the time.
Thank you.
You know, I have a lot of doubts about it. I mean, I hate to see people arming the way that they are. It's as though end of times are coming or what have you. Everybody's afraid of them, their own shadow. But
yeah, guns aren't going to do much for the end of times, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. Well, I do see an oppressive government taking shape nowadays, and I feel as though that, you know, people maybe either are afraid of that fact or maybe even the legislation that's being passed is being bought and paid for. But in my opinion, I do think of Barack Obama is probably one of the supremacist lobbyists that we've ever had in office.
Mm-hmm.
And everything is bought and paid for by, you know, special interests. So, you know, does get accomplished, it's always somebody behind the scenes who's bought and paid for it. So,
okay, that's fine. And I had a similar feeling towards the previous administration, thinking they were corrupt and oppressive. I just don't see how having a room full of guns would have helped me in that case, or how it helps anybody in this case.
Yeah, no, exactly. As well as, you know, nor do we need a government with so many layers of Homeland Security, the FBI, CIA. You know, the, mm-hmm. the agencies go on and on. I mean, there's so many overlaps of government bodies that claim that they're going to save us from ourselves.
Oh, of course, yeah.
It seems as though that they fail at every level, and then they just end up using each other as an excuse for why they failed. And ultimately, we've just over-inundated ourselves with agencies that define themselves by protecting us. You know, and it would seem to me that that is basically what our government does in its entirety, is that it's saving us from ourselves. And ultimately, you know, for the citizenry to bear arms, it's a horrible, horrible state of affairs. And ultimately, what we're ending up with is, just the other day, I think it was yesterday, a cop killed another cop or shot another cop. I mean, they're the worst. I mean, the police agencies are so overarmed and so gung-ho to use these toys and these new weapons that they've been allowed to have and carry. And have you ever been to the subway in the city? I mean, if they're at a high level of terrorist,
uh-huh.
guys have like assault rifles and machine guns.
Yeah,
you know?
And what in God's name are they going to do in a subway with an assault weapon? You know, if they even start firing that thing, it's going to ricochet everywhere.
Yeah, I would imagine it's more of the fear factor. They're trying to make everybody afraid mm-hmm. of them.
Yes, so, exactly.
You know, but they're just as fallible as we are. You know, these people that are arming themselves to the teeth without any form of really quality training are no better than the police agencies that are paid, you know, so much tax dollar that mm-hmm. is just, we're throwing so much good money at this, the boogeyman, you know? And,
right.
And I truly believe, you know, the other day you had the Fruit of the Boom bomber, the guy in the airplane. I mean, it was the passengers on the plane that protected them.
That's
right.
It
wasn't the agencies that we pay a gazillion dollars to protect us from the Fruit of the Boom bomber, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So ultimately, it's up to us to protect ourselves. And, you know, police usually show up after the fact. They're never there when you need them. So I can understand to a certain regard why people would want to have some form of protection for themselves.
Yeah, but making the same mistakes the police make, as I think you pointed out, that's not the answer. I mean, the police come into a situation overarmed, overprotected, and basically just setting themselves apart from the rest of the human race. I don't think the solution is to act more like them.
Exactly. No, I couldn't agree with you more, and I do believe that arming ourselves to the teeth is not the answer. Just as, you know, we're telling the Iranians that they can't have a nuclear program, but it's all right for us to...
Right.
You know, I think just today Barack Obama canceled his campaign for a new generation of nuclear weapons. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's insanity to think that we need any more weapons, and if anything, we should be setting an example for the rest of the world rather than trying to build more. I mean, Israel has all these weapons that they're not held accountable to, and yet the Iranians aren't allowed to have nuclear energy for their own.
I'm afraid that's going to have to be the last word because we are out of time, but thanks so much for your call.
Yeah, thank you, and like I said, it all comes down to hypocrisy, you know?
Yes.
You know, once.
Okay, but I mean it.
We're out of time.
I really mean it. But thanks for your call. I really have. I'm under the gun here. I didn't mean that in a bad way. Under the gun in a good way. Whatever. Let's go out with a classic. We'll see you next week. OTW2600.com. Have a good night.
Hey, Mr. Man in the Street. Excuse me. Have a few moments to spare, oh yeah. Don't worry, I'm not trying to sell you anything you wouldn't want. I'm just a questioner. Tell me what you think about this low-fat diet shampoo. Do you think it's crunchy, half crunchy, or not crunchy at all? Put a tick in the appropriate box. There's nothing to it. Yes, no, don't, no, I don't care. I'm only a questionnaire. Only a questionnaire. Please, Mr. Man on the Street, believe me. I'm only doing my job and I need to know. About you, take it easy. All you gotta do is answer yes or no. Tell me what you think about the devil and the deep blue sea. Do you think there's one true God or false God or no God at all? Put a tick in the appropriate box. There's nothing to it. Yes, no, don't, no, I don't care. I'm only a questionnaire. Yes, no, don't, no, I don't care. I'm only a questionnaire. Only a questionnaire. We'll be right back.
Kids, Tuesday evening, WUSB, Stony Brook Finn with Finn's Revolution till 9 p.m. We have some giveaways coming up for you, so please stay tuned for that.
Lucy, 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 Luc